The following is a recording for Carly Frank with the National Retail Federation on Monday, November 23rd, 2020 at 10 a.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will then open the floor for questions. And at that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. It's now my pleasure to turn today's conference over to Mr. Bill Thorne. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Carrie. I'm Bill Thorne. I'm the National Retail Federation Senior Vice President of Communications and Public Affairs. And I want to thank each of you for joining us today for the NRF 2020 Holiday Forecast Discussion. We hope everyone is safe and well. And with me on the call is NRF President and CEO Matthew Shea and NRF Chief Economist Jack Kleinhans. So let's just kick things off, and I'm going to go to Matt to discuss our holiday sales forecast. Matt, what can you tell us about expectations for holiday sales growth this year?
Well, thanks, Bill. Good morning, everyone, and thank all of you for joining us. I'll just add to Bill's comments my hope that you're all safe, healthy, and well, and how much we appreciate your taking the time to be with us today for this conversation. It has certainly been an historic year, as we all know, with both the different aspects of challenges we face, the COVID-19 pandemic, of course, but the enormous emotion around the election, and of course, social unrest going back to the beginning of this summer, and the continuing conversation about racial and social justice in this country. And with that backdrop, we know that the holiday season as well will be unlike any other. And that is one of the reasons we're a little bit later with our forecast than we would normally be. So we're grateful for your patience as we worked through the release and thought through our forecast. Normally, as you know, we would have announced our holiday forecast about a month ago, a little more than a month, in early October. But with all of the uncertainty caused by the pandemic, there's certainly a lot of uncertainty in the forecasting of these kinds of assessments, and it was difficult for us to find a roadmap that we felt comfortable following. So we waited the extra month, and it was our sense that that would give us additional data that would allow us to make a more thoughtful and well-founded projection. Before we address the forecast specifically, I do want to acknowledge something that has been made clear to us and to me throughout this last 10 months of the pandemic in conversations with CEOs of retail companies, with executives throughout retail organizations, and by retail employees themselves. And I just want to acknowledge the enormous emphasis and priority that retailers have placed on the health and safety of their teams, of their customers, and the communities in which they live and work. Since the onset of the pandemic, we've seen retailers on the front lines serving those communities, and they've invested billions and billions of dollars in safety protocols and procedures to ensure the health and safety of those team members and the customers and the communities that they serve. And these protocols and procedures go really above and beyond municipal, state, federal guidance. That continues to be the foundation for the kinds of procedures that are being adopted. But retailers are doing even more than has been required. And I think that's really a central feature of the success of retail and the consumer confidence that we've seen restored and the very robust consumption that's taken place over the last 6 months is because consumers can tell that retailers are taking great lengths to guarantee safety in those places of business and are going to continue to be prepared to serve them as we move into the holiday season. If there's one thing that we have learned this year and we've seen again and again and again, it's that retailers will constantly evolve and adapt to meet consumer demand. And there are myriad examples of innovation, of real agility to continue to safely serve customers and communities, the enhancements to the supply chain, to fulfillment, to digital engagement, payments, over and over and over again. We've seen that, and I think we should expect to continue to see that through the holiday season. Having said all that, in spite of those tremendous challenges that have been present throughout this year, our view is that the outlook for the holiday season is very bright. And we say that for a few reasons. First, we know that consumers throughout this year have responded very, very positively to other holidays, whether it was Mother's Day and Father's Day, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, Halloween, Thanksgiving. We've seen consumers very, very engaged, looking for opportunities to celebrate, and they've moved into real consumption mode around the holidays. So we think that's a good indicator of the behavior we'll see this year. Secondly, we all know that retailers have embraced an earlier start to the holiday season and have been planning ahead for many, many months to serve consumers in this changed environment. That means everything was pulled forward. We saw a number of major shopping events take place in October, 4 to 6 weeks earlier than we would normally see. We saw inventory on shelves. We saw promotions and discounting, seasonal staff hires taking place much earlier. And, again, in terms of the innovation and the agility we've seen, retailers have really pivoted to meet the increased demand in online shopping and the use of curbside pickup or buy online and pickup at store or in-store, same-day delivery. So those will all be major features of what we'll see this holiday season. Third, our own research demonstrates that that consumers are responsive to this, and more than 40% of consumers have indicated to us in our survey work that they started their holiday shopping season earlier than normal this year. And again, in talking to CEOs of retail companies across segments in the industry, what I have consistently heard from those CEOs is that they can see consumers changing their behavior. Consumers are responding. Consumers are adapting as well, changing their own habits, changing their own behavior and the way in which they engage. And I think this this research work that we've done that shows such a substantial portion are starting earlier than normal really reflects that consumers are embracing the challenges in the environment and they're adapting their own behavior to meet that. And then finally, we've seen very positive retail sales during the past 6 months. And while it has not been necessarily distributed evenly across every category, we know there's tremendous momentum as we head into the second half of the holiday season. We've seen these last 6 months of consistent growth, month over month, year over year, in pretty dramatic ways for a number of reasons, and we'll talk about that. But we know that we've got momentum as we head into this season, as we saw with the most recent monthly numbers that were released for the month of October. For the first 10 months of this year, retail sales were up 6.4% versus the first 10 months of 2019, and we expect that momentum will keep consumers out there demonstrating a lot of energy and enthusiasm and spending throughout the rest of the year, in spite of that remaining uncertainty related to the virus. So with all that as background, it is our forecast that the 2020 holiday season will see retail sales growth between 3.6% and 5.2% over 2019. And that works out in the aggregate to retail sales during the holiday season of between $755 billion to $767 billion. And just by comparison, last year holiday sales grew by just around 4% over 2018 and generated a little less than $730 billion for that holiday period. So So we're expecting very robust growth, in excess of what we've seen over the last decade. Holiday retail sales have averaged an increase of 3.5% over the past 5 years. So we'll do better than that. And just a little further background on what's in and what's out. Our holiday sales forecast does include online and other, the broader category of non-store sales. And we expect that category to increase between 20% and 30% to a total of between $202 billion to $218 billion, which will be driven, of course, by those substantial online purchases. And that's up from about $170 billion last year. In terms of meeting this demand, we anticipate that retailers will hire between 475,000 and 575,000 seasonal workers. That compares with about 560,000 seasonal hires last year. And, you know, as we know, and as I referenced, we know the holiday season has been pulled earlier this year, back into October. So some of this hiring and the other activity generated by the extended holiday season may have been pulled forward into October as many retailers geared up and implemented their holiday sales campaigns and therefore had to meet that demand with additional hires and other investments. And in terms of the things that are the same about our forecast, we did keep the same measurement period. So we assess the holiday as the period between November 1st and December 31st. And that is consistent in this forecast as it has been for the past 20 years. We also exclude sales at auto dealers, gasoline stations, and restaurants because those are not, in our view, core retail. And that's also consistent with forecasts of ours over the previous two decades. And we know there are a number of other forecasts out there, as you all know, from other organizations, and obviously there will be variations that depend on the period of time during which they're assessing holiday sales and, of course, what they consider to be core to their particular assessment. So I would encourage you to think through the methodology, and our economist, my colleague Jack Kleinhans, will be on in a couple of minutes and can speak to that specifically. There are a number of forecast factors that go into the forecast. As I said, Jack will talk about the key assumptions in our projections that include, of course, as you would expect, and as we've discussed before, the macro indicators, employment, income, consumer confidence, GDP, to name just a few. But again, we're maintaining consistency in terms of the way we've done this forecast, notwithstanding the fact that it's about a month later than we would normally put out there. I guess the last point I'll make before I hand it back over to Bill is just the emotion around this year, and particularly around the holiday. And we have seen not only this year the consistent engagement from consumers around holidays, but we know that the end of the year holidays have historically surprised us because of the steps that consumers take to be engaged at the holiday season, and because of the opportunities that exist as retailers look for the promotions and the real deals that will attract consumers. So what we've seen so far is consumers are, they're excited about the season, they're engaged, their spending, as we know, is propelling and in some ways really propping up our economy. So we expect a strong finish to the season, and we will, of course, continue to work with state, local, federal leaders to keep the holiday season moving forward in a safe and healthy way and keep the economy open and operating. So with that, Bill, why don't I hand it back over to you and to Jack, and you can elaborate on these highlights.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. That was very insightful. And to the folks on the phone, just be aware that after Jack completes his remarks, we will be opening up the lines for questions. So, Jack, our chief economist, maybe you could give us a little more insight into the forecast and overall economic expectations. What insights can you provide about the economy, the forecast that we're announcing today, and consumer expectations, Jack?
Well, thanks, Bill, and thanks, Matt. Just to follow up, because this is such an unusual year, I might go into a little bit more detail than maybe we have in the past regarding the mechanics of the forecast. As we always do, we begin with current data and we make assumptions about the individual direction, the rate of change, the level, the impact on the ability to spend, and the willingness to spend by consumers. And as Matt just mentioned, several of these key variables include disposable income, past retail sales, consumer credit, et cetera. Of course, then, recently, because of the ability to have such data, there's high-frequency data that provides snapshots on consumer mobility and really the current economy. We don't have to wait necessarily months for some data that we have in the past. Now, this year, you'll note that the range is 3.6 to 5.2% over 2019, and I look at this as a likelihood function. That is, that the likelihood, a high probability, it will be between these two extremes, and it's a little broader than in the past, but that's also the capture of the uncertainty that we're seeing within the economy, this unusual environment. And so it could be that we could exceed this range, and of course, there's a chance that we could be below the range. It'll depend upon how the contours of the economy develop. But there is no doubt that we are within unusual economic environment in our lifetimes. I can't think of a period with so many simultaneous factors hitting the economy at once when formulating this forecast. And so I'd like to go through several of those factors just as the underpinnings, the foundation for some of our thoughts about the outlook. And certainly the pandemic has provided such uncertainty that we need to recognize that it's hard to quantify the such uncertainty. And as we think about this, though, something that we have to provide judgment on, not hard data, is that we have a belief that the psychological factor is important at this time, that we owe it to ourselves, to our families, to have a better, possibly a better than normal holiday season. Some interesting factors that make this much different than perhaps different periods of time is that we've had a record level of savings that have accumulated from stimulus payments, or possibly less spending on personal services like travel, leisure, dining, entertainment. Because of the COVID restrictions. So there perhaps is more dollars in the wallet to go further. We certainly have seen a relatively strong balance sheet. This actually was evident before we went into the pandemic, but it has since been supported by some equity market gains and housing market gains. And, of course, there's other factors like exceptionally low energy costs, including gas prices, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But important to the forecast is truly the disposable personal income available for spending, and that increased about 6.9% on a year-over-year basis in September, and it's now about $800 billion larger than it was back in March. My assumption is at this point we're expecting in the fourth quarter that disposable personal income will be around 5%, give or take a little bit here or there. That is a key variable as we have to focus in on going forward. This rise in incomes that we have seen was strengthened by wage and salary gains because of employment gains, but also a certain amount of savings that has occurred because of the stimulus payments. Household net worth is an important part. The wealth effect for many people is not maybe recognized as much, but studies have shown for every dollar or so of wealth effect, you get a penny or two of spending. And certainly we've seen household net worth surge in the second quarter and had surpassed pre-pandemic peak. And much of the gains have come from certainly the holding of equities and our home prices, home values. The balance sheet has been important here, too, is that they have paid down debt And it also, to the extent that there is higher savings, has also put this in a very positive, if you will, situation. As Matt mentioned earlier, retail sales have been up on a month-to-month and a year-over-year. So the momentum is very important as we think about going into this period. Now, regarding energy costs, I think this is an important feature that we need to take into consideration, and it should free up dollars to support holiday spending. Actually, gasoline prices are down nearly in many parts of the United States by 40 cents. Now, people are not traveling as much or depending on the car usage, so that there is less demand, and pricing reflects that. We also know that the average gas, natural gas price is going to reflect demand and supply, and consumption is actually expected to go up during this period of time due to colder temperatures and people burning more than usual heat and power their homes because they're going to be in their homes a little bit more. So, you know, we're really taking into consideration a number of factors, but the price of natural gas is down about 2%. And the price of heating oil is also about 28% lower. So, again, I think these are positive factors that will influence the ability to spend. We can't minimize the importance of weather. It always plays a role in holiday sales. It'll vary by region. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's weather summary favors cooler, wetter north and a drier, warmer south. Because of the La Nina climate phenomenon that we're experiencing, if we go back a few years, you could look at the data in 2005, 10, 11, and 17. This was a factor in spending. We had some colder and wetter or more precipitation, and there was some correlation with higher retail sales. Now, Matt touched on digital shopping transformation, and it has been impressive. And they will be certainly a shift of spending from some of the quote-unquote in-store categories that we look at into the non-store e-commerce category. And I think we know that consumers have embraced and are becoming much more comfortable with digital shopping, and that's also got to be taken into account as we think about the forecast. And e-commerce, as you might have seen last week or so, was reported for the most recent quarter, and it's up 36.7% for the quarter compared to a year ago. And so digital shopping is going to be a factor, and thank God we have it. It's been important for many households because they have been restricted. And, of course, as we think about the risks of the forecast, certainly the upside risk is that people could be more engaged. Certainly the optimism that we have right now for the prospect of a vaccine is certainly on the minds of consumers, and that there is hope that we're turning the corner. But there is also the fact that we can't just step away from the third quarter bounce that we had and think that that will continue. The fourth quarter shows a solid economic engagement, but it will be much slower than the last quarter, and it'll probably continue into 2021. And on top of that, there's a long shadow over many of the positive elements that I've just outlined that includes the surging virus and the expiring government support. Every virus indicator across the United States is elevated and in fact, has accelerated this past weekend. And this could pump the brakes on the momentum we've seen and have a consequence to spending, and certainly is a potential downside. But despite the sort of pumping of the brake, we do believe that there is energy of spending through the end of the year, despite the uncertainty. Additional restrictions on mobility could result in slower job and income growth. Simply put, rising cases and tighter restrictions could set the recovery in reverse. So let me conclude. You can see that the forecast is part science, part judgment, and, of course, part luck. Bill?
Thank you, Jack. Carrie, I think we're ready to open the line for questions. So would you provide some guidance to the participants that would in fact like to ask a question?
Yes, sir. At this time, we'd like to open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in which the order they are received. If at any time you'd like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. Again, that is star 1 to ask an audio question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal.
Matt, well, we're going to wait for questions to tee up. There's one issue in the news right now that's dominating headlines. You see it every night on the nightly news. You hear it in the morning at the morning shows. Pick up the paper, you read about it. As COVID rates continue to increase across the country, what is the impact state and local restrictions, what is the impact that those closings will have on retail operations, especially during the holiday sales season?
Well, Bill and Jack, thanks for those thoughts. Great insight and great additional perspective to build on the specifics of the forecast. You know, what we saw early this year was that the wide variety and sort of arbitrary nature of the decision-making process really wreaked havoc on communities. And, you know, our view was that the entire framework in many cases was just flawed because the restrictions about which businesses could or should be open was based not on the health and safety of the way in which they operated those businesses, but it was based on the products that were sold by those particular retailers. And, you know, the products are inanimate objects. There's nothing inherently safe or unsafe about the products that get sold. But there's something very potentially unsafe about certain kinds of behavior. So our emphasis has been on encouraging the state and local municipalities to really be thoughtful about establishing these operating guidelines and to think through how you modify behavior as opposed to make decisions based on products. And you know, retailers have responded since the beginning of the pandemic. As we've discussed, retailers have been on the front lines and have seen firsthand what works and what doesn't work when it comes to keeping their teams, their associates, their partners safe, and protecting their customers and allowing them to continue to serve those communities. So retailers know what works because they've been doing it every day since February 1st. And, of course, following the guidance of CDC and state and local public health experts, monitoring the situation, taking additional measures to ensure that that we can continue to do these things safely and keep everybody healthy. But, you know, widespread shutdowns of the economy are not the solution to the problem. And because the problem is largely not what happens in stores, the problem is what happens when people behave outside of those stores, when you don't have the same ability to ensure appropriate behavior. You know, I think that's why we have been calling on state and local governments really to focus on the ways in which we're doing things safely and again, not focus on products. Because, you know, there's nothing inherently safe or unsafe about an inanimate object like a product. And I will say that in partnership with federal, state, local health officials and policy and decision makers, we've been very, very active going back to the beginning of the year, the launch of our program Operation Open Doors, which took the experiences and the lessons learned by hundreds of major retailers and shared those experiences and those lessons freely between and among those businesses to assure that they could learn from one another and continue to adopt the most relevant and effective procedures. And that work continues regularly, engaged in that forum. And then about a month ago, we launched our new holiday traditions campaign, which was designed to help consumers modify their behavior and think differently about how to behave safely, to change their patterns, to start earlier. And I think that has largely been very, very well received, as we talked about a minute ago, that 40%+ of consumers that have indicated they have started their shopping earlier, I think is in part due to the campaign and our ability to raise awareness among consumers. So, our view is that every one of those retail businesses, every one of those jobs that is created by those retail businesses, those 52 million Americans, better than one in four that are involved in retail, they're all essential. And we ought to protect and preserve all of them. And what we need is uniform and consistent messaging and guidelines from all levels of government about how we can partner together. And we're in this together, and we ought to be doing this as partners. And learning from each other and moving forward together, implementing the kinds of things we need to ensure appropriate behavior, as opposed to a lot of arbitrary, inconsistent sorts of mandates and guidelines that really don't help us operate more safely, and they simply confuse consumers and inhibit what we're all trying to accomplish, which is safe and healthy operations.
Thank you, Matt. Carrie, we'll go ahead and take that first question.
Thank you. Our first question will come from Lauren Thomas from CNBC.
Thank you, guys. I want to make sure. Hey, good morning. I want to make sure you can hear me. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you fine.
Okay, perfect. So I wanted to see if you had thoughts on this idea of kind of the winners and losers of the holiday season. And places like, you know, a lot of these essential retailers and big box stores really benefiting from shoppers going and just buying everything in one trip, as we're seeing they're taking fewer trips and just kind of stocking up all at once. Wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that.
Hey, Matt, you want to take that?
Yeah, well, Lauren, as I was just alluding to a minute ago, certainly was our view from the beginning of the pandemic, that there were some pretty substantial inequities in making arbitrary decisions about which kinds of businesses were, quote, essential and which were non-essential. And that obviously worked a tremendous hardship for those businesses that were forced to close earlier this year. As one retail CEO said way back in March, no retail business is built to be closed. And so just arbitrarily saying you've got to be closed, you can't operate, and that clearly was in some ways the hand of government tilting the scales of the marketplace against one category of business in favor of another under the guise of the public health. I think since that time we've demonstrated very, very clearly that the decisions ought not be based on the products that are sold. The decisions ought to be based on the behaviors that occur in those businesses. I think what we've all seen in the research is that as consumers have evolved their purchasing behavior, that they are, in fact, trying to limit the number of trips they make. They're bundling purchases. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, those retailers who have a particular expertise or focus on a particular category are finding ways to compete. I don't think anyone could have predicted way back in April that we would see the strength of the consumer that we have seen. And not all categories have rebounded completely, but even those that were hit hardest have come back more quickly than they expected. So I think the holiday season will be a chance for all of those retailers to be more engaged and more successful as we head into the next phase of fighting the pandemic.
Got it. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Lauren. Hey,
thanks,
Mary.
Lauren.
Who's next?
Our next question will be from Ann DeCincio from the Associated Press.
Safety protocols. I know that obviously stores have been trying to enforce some of the protocols, but they've been facing backlash from shoppers. Can you tell me just about how the training has been going? You partnered with, an organization to help workers de-escalate tensions. Can you just talk about maybe how that's going and what the challenges are during this holiday season when there's going to be more people and tensions are probably going to escalate? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for that question. Yeah, so I would say a couple of things. First of all, way back in July, when we announced our support for mask mandates to certainly support our many member companies who are moving in that direction, you've seen major retailers adopt these policies since July. So we've had 4 or 5 months of sort of adopting new behavioral norms in places around the country. And you've seen a number of states and local governments, continue to evolve their own thinking about what should or should not be required. So I think in many ways, we've made enormous progress there, obviously not enough, given what we're seeing in terms of the case counts, but we've made progress. The resources that we put into the marketplace, both that you referenced as well as health and safety protocols, but also de-escalation, have been very positively received. Retailers, of course, are evolving their own sorts of tools for this. And, our shared objective is to not make this adversarial, but to not put anyone's health or safety any more at risk than it already is, but to ensure that people are taking care of each other and those team members and those particular customers that might be in those stores. And by and large, it's worked very well. I think the last observation I'd make is that just consistent with the changed behavior we've seen in other areas and the way consumers are behaving differently, this is one of those areas as well. And I think, we want to move beyond, some of the language around this and really make it about health and safety. And I think by and large, consumers are responding to that, but of course it's not consistent everywhere, and we're going to have to continue to create opportunities to support retailers and to encourage them to do everything they can to protect their customers and their own team members.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you. Our next Gary? Question will be from Jordan Holman from Bloomberg News.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Jordan.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I would love to hear more about how the possibility of a vaccine, even one that would come next year, would influence shoppers this holiday season. And then also from your conversation with retail executives, how is this influencing their planning for the future of their stores? Thanks.
So Jordan, it's Matt Shea. So I'll answer the second part first. I think the planning for the future, I think in the conversations that I've had with CEOs and senior executives, there are some lessons that they've learned here that will be sustainable. And some of that goes into prioritization of investments. Some of that goes into speed of decision-making. Some of that goes into the new technologies and innovation. I think there's a recognition that you've got to continue to plan for uncertainty in the supply chain, places like that. So I think that the planning on a go-forward basis is going to manifest itself in lots of different ways. But overall, I think the big takeaway will be that the pace of change will simply be accelerated as a result of this. And you'll continue to see new partnerships emerge. You'll continue to see people thinking about how to use physical locations in truly transformative ways. You'll continue to see great emphasis on digital fulfillment. So all of those things will, I think, simply accelerate and be sustained. As far as the impact of the promise of a vaccine on consumer psyche and behavior, the best, most recent example I can give you is in the holiday season in 2017, there was an enormous conversation taking place about tax reform and about the prospect for the first major revision to the U.S. federal tax code in 25 years. Now, the president didn't sign that tax law after it was passed by the Congress, didn't sign it until just a couple of days before Christmas of 2017, and it wasn't going to take effect until 2018, which means no one would actually receive the benefits until they filed their tax returns in 2019. Nevertheless, the mere prospect of tax reform really impacted consumer sentiment in December of 17, when we all knew that it wasn't going to have any effect on their ability to spend, but it was an emotional impact. And I think similarly, as Jack alluded to, the promise and the prospect of not only widely distributed and highly effective vaccines, but also the increased progress on therapeutics to treat the coronavirus, I think those are all having an impact on consumer psyche and confidence. We don't want that to lead to irresponsible behavior, because obviously the vaccine that you can't get until next April isn't going to help you now if you're walking around without a mask. So you have to temper the enthusiasm. But I think the psyche, listen, another drug company released this morning great results. That's three now in terms of vaccines. There will be more. Therapeutics are getting better. We will beat the virus. I think the psyche is impacted by the recognition that we didn't run into an economic recession here. We ran into a medical recession. And once we solve the medical problem, the economy should be healthy if we can keep moving forward until we can vanquish the virus. And I think that you will see that play on consumer psyche as we head into the rest of the holiday season.
Hey, Matt, I think Jack had some thoughts on that as well.
Well, I just want to pick up on that, Matt. I think you're right on. In fact, I think people have more certainty about making plans for the future. And that could actually translate into some spending today, but perhaps not use until the future. Let's just for a good example, plans for a vacation or travel. They may need equipment. They may need clothing, a number of things that they think there's a high possibility or good possibility that they'll be able, because there is such a pent-up demand for certain activities. So I think it can translate into some spending. It is speculative on my part, but I think, as Matt is saying, the psyche is very important at this time of the year in terms of how people view gift giving and actually, taking care of oneself.
Thanks, Jack. Carrie?
Thank you. Our next question will be from Alex. Thank you. From The Hill.
Hi, Alex. How are
Hi
you?
Hi there. Good. How are you? Thanks for doing this call.
No problem.
You mentioned that online sales and other non-store sales are expected to increase somewhere between 20% and 30%. I'm curious if you, what you're seeing or what you'd predict for in-store sales. Do you think that those will either go down, or are they growing at a slower rate compared to this time last year?
Jack, you want to take that one?
Sure. I think it's going to be a difficult call. There's definitely shifts that are going on within these categories. Some shopping, perhaps, that has taken place traditionally, let's just say, in clothing accessory stores, are going to show up in the non-store category, because many retailers have accommodated. They have the technology. They're fulfilling their orders from either their store or from their warehouse, and still at times keeping their stores open. This is true to a certain extent on electronics and home electronics and appliances. But, you know, we've seen such real strength in furniture and home furnishings and in building and garden equipment over the last few months. I believe that that those categories will probably continue, especially since we haven't mentioned the amount of housing and the strength in the housing market, which is certainly pulling along retail sales in these categories. As you buy a new home or build a new home, you're going to outfit these homes with retail products and capabilities. So I think it's going to be a matter of some categories will do better than others, and some will see the shift into the non-store. And we just don't have the ability to be able to give you any more precision in trying to give you a total shift dollar-wise or percentage-wise between the categories and into the e-commerce.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question will be from Joan Burden from ForbesCom Retail.
Hi there. Hi there. Hi, Matt. I wanted to get your thoughts on this because you do talk to so many retail CEOs and executives. This year, a number of retailers have announced that they're not going to open on Thanksgiving. You know, we saw the years of the trend towards more and more opening on Thanksgiving. Then a few started saying they weren't going to open Thanksgiving this year. Many more said they weren't going to open on Thanksgiving Day. I'm just wondering if you think that it's going to be a one-year occurrence where it stops this year but then it resumes, or is sort of that Thanksgiving store opening trend over and done?
Well, I think it's a good question. You know, one thing we know is that consumers are really at the heart of the decisions that that retailers make about the way in which they operate their businesses. So, I think it's going to be up to consumers. If consumers embrace this, then we'll see it continue. If we see, in another year or two after the vaccine, and everybody really wants to be out and have those interactions again, you know, I think it'll be in response to what the market signals. And, you know, remember what Black Friday has evolved to over the last decade is for many Americans, it's a social event. It's a family event. It's an event with friends. Similarly, on Thanksgiving Day, it was born of the recovery from the recession, when consumers were incredibly value-driven, as they continue to be, but it evolved into something that was about more than simply getting a great deal. It evolved into a social opportunity. And so I think when consumers are demonstrating they want that kind of a social opportunity again, then you'll see retailers continue to adjust their calendars to meet that need.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks. Carrie?
Thank you. Our next question will be from Bertha Coombs from CNBC.
Hi. I have a question about the impact of expiring benefits at the end of the year. A lot of people with mortgage forbearance also coming to a close. You talked about that potentially having an impact. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are and what kind of impact if suddenly people decide we don't need another stimulus, given that we are in this transition from one Congress to another.
Matt?
Hello?
Matt? Are you
with us? I'm here.
I'm here.
Can you
okay.
hear me? Can you hear
yep.
me? Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Did you hear my question?
I did not hear all of it.
Okay, so we have expiring unemployment benefits, mortgage forbearance, and those issues coming due at the end of the year, and we are in a transition to a new Congress. What happens if we don't get a new stimulus bill? You sort of alluded to that. What are your thoughts on how that could impact psyche with you know, 7-8 million people on unemployment benefits?
Well, certainly it's been our view consistently that there are sectors of the economy and there are millions of Americans that continue to need support, and that administration and congressional leaders should find a way to come together to provide that support. You know, notwithstanding the very positive and robust numbers that we're forecasting for the holiday season, not every sector of the economy has recovered. And for that matter, not every retail business inside retail as a whole has recovered. And so those benefits that have been provided, that fiscal stimulus, Jack alluded to the direct payments and to the bonus unemployment insurance, you know, that provided a real lifeline for American families and for workers. So we think there's still more that needs to be done. Obviously, the politics of the moment, as you note, because we're in the midst of a transition from one administration to another, there are some questions remaining about control of the Congress because of the two Senate seats still undecided in the state of Georgia. And all of that is playing on the minds of congressional leaders who are trying to work their own calculus. But unfortunately, while they work the calculus, American families and workers are in limbo, waiting for that additional stimulus. So certainly it would be our view that getting something done before the end of this calendar year would be positive for the economy. I'm not sure how many Americans are counting on that and paying as much attention to it. But certainly our view is if it happened, that would simply be one more very strong shot in the arm to keep our economy moving forward. And it's a bit of a, I guess it's a bit of a trade-off potentially, whether there's a sense on the part of some elected leaders they could get a better deal if they waited. The problem is waiting just puts some of those American families in real jeopardy. So our view would be it'd be better to get something done now, even if that means go back later and do more in the new year.
Thank you, Matt. Hey, Carrie, we have a hard stop coming up in just a couple minutes, but do we have anybody else in the queue?
We do. We have one other questioner in the queue from Alistair Gray from Financial Times.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'm just wondering how big the risk is of shortages this year, because demand has been greater than had been anticipated, and you know, what products are you seeing the biggest pressure points, and also what in practice are your members doing about this? Presumably it's a bit late now to be ramping up inventory. Thanks.
Yeah, so this is Matt. I'll start. Jack may have some thoughts and observations here, but Alistair, I would say that in my conversations with CEOs that they feel like the supply chain, while it was severely strained earlier this year, that they're not chasing inventory in too many categories at the moment. I mean, certainly there are limits to the number of items, and I think particularly on some of the promotional items that go with the holiday season. So, and there's a little more integrity in the pricing. If you want a particular holiday gift, they're not going to have unlimited numbers of those, and they're not going to be probably discounting them to move them. But by and large, I think retailers and their partners did a masterful job of navigating the early months and weeks of the pandemic, and have now adjusted, working with their sourcing partners, have adjusted the supply chain and have sufficient inventory to meet the expected demand for the holiday season. But Jack, if you got any thoughts, you want to add anything, kick it over to you.
Real quick, Matt, I think you're on point. The fact of the matter is, remember, there's holiday gifting, which I think inventory probably is in good shape. Some of the backup is in for some of the bigger ticket items that are more home improvement, home related. And that's probably a little bit of a challenge for some consumers. But I think we need to differentiate holiday gifts from the broader retail spend.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Alistair. And thank everyone for joining us today. If you have any questions about the forecast, you can contact our media staff at press@nrf.com or call 855-NRF-PRESS. Thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.